Hi, I'm Jillian Swinford.
And I'm Haley Brolison.
And this is Mother Nature Will Kill You,
a podcast about the most horrific tragedies
and the most triumphant survival stories that the wilderness can provide.
So grab your backpack
and maybe a bottle of wine.
And let's go on a wild ride into the unknown.
Walking down this road I go, but I am going alone. Running far, far from home, till I am but skin and bone. I don't wanna die, but I'll have to try. Oh, I don't wanna die, but I'm on my own.
Happy spooky Halloween!
Woo!
So Halloween is tomorrow for us, but when this comes out, Halloween will have long passed.
Yes.
But for us, it's Halloween.
Yeah. Spooky season.
It's spooky season. And we mm-hmm. actually have a cold front, and it's like in the 40s in Texas. In South Texas, of all places, and it's just really giving me the vibe and like giving me so much life. We probably won't get that many trick-or-treaters though now.
Oh yeah, because it's too cold for people to be out there.
Well, it's too cold for Texans, for
well,
sure.
Well, yeah, that's what I meant by people, Texans. Yeah,
like that's if you're from Massachusetts, that's nothing.
Yeah, it's like you're still walking around with a t-shirt on in 47 degrees.
Exactly. But it was so wonderful. It's cold enough. It's the wind down here is what really makes everything so much more colder than you think it's going to be. Because yeah. like, it's so windy in Texas. You don't realize that till you move here. There's always wind, almost always wind. And
it's been really windy down here too. Like yeah. borderline unpleasant windy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's the nice sea breeze that cools it down. And then there's like the aggressive wind that like you just yeah. have to hold everything down and like have your hair tied back. And like,
yeah, otherwise it gets into like a big knotted mess. Yeah. It's just constantly like blowing on your face and you get like windburn. It's so that coupled with like cold temperatures actually makes it pretty chilly.
Yeah.
And little Mersey was shivering outside today. So we put the sweater on for the walk.
I was going to ask if you had a sweater for her. I love yeah. that.
I mean, she's the sight hound. Sight hounds aren't really known for their warm fur.
Yeah, that's fair.
She's also a lab. So sometimes she's fine. And other times she's like, ooh, no.
Yeah.
Right, Marcy? She's asleep. Already asleep.
Aww.
It's funny. I came and set up here and she got so pumped, so jazzed about it. She came like barreling up here with her little puppy paws. And literally, I don't know, 2 minutes later, she's over here passed out.
Oh, that's nice though. Waylon's passed out in the living room with Alex. So
yes.
Yeah. It's bedtime. But of course, if I like close the door completely, then he's going to get up and be like, Mom, you locked me out.
Yeah.
I want to come in.
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. he'll come in. So I have it just slightly cracked for when he wants to decide to come in. He can
mm-hmm.
come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've just been doing all of the Halloween stuff this weekend.
Yeah. Your Halloween ball or your Halloween mm-hmm. gala, whatever. That looked really fun. And at first I thought you guys literally went as Zoltar. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's awesome.
No, but
and then like I swiped through and I was like, oh, they didn't go, but their costumes are still awesome.
Yeah. So it was like spooky circus theme, which is a valid Halloween theme. I just personally yeah. hate clowns.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Not into that. But I do like the whole like sideshow kind of like freaky element of like mm-hmm. a circus theme. So our friends went as the two-headed couple, basically. They both had yeah. two heads, and they're the ones who convinced us to go. or have been telling me about it for years. And we just never have had the money or the time to do it until this year. And so I put in a lot of effort because they told me that everybody goes all out. Like it's a masquerade. People are in ball gowns. Like it's a whole thing. And so I was like, well, I got to put effort into it so I can at least like show up presenting some kind of costume.
Yeah.
Turns out we put in more
way too much effort.
Yeah.
That is like my nightmare. I was telling my coworker that today because she was asking if I had any Halloween plans. And I was like, you know, honestly, like I don't really care for Halloween. Like if somebody invites me to a party, I'm like, I just kind of pull an outfit out that I have, you know, in the closet. But like if I like, I don't know, I have like, I was telling her that I have this innate fear of like being the only one dressed up. So like I never like want to go like all out on a costume. Mm-hmm. But then like, you know, I'm in these Facebook groups with my friends who do Fantasy Fest parades every year. And like there's a theme. And so like I did one a couple of years ago. So now I'm still in the group, you know. And I'm like, you know, that's fun. Like if it's planned ahead of time and like, you know, we're getting a group to do it and it's like a group costume, you know, like I'll do my part. But if I'm left to my own devices, like, I don't know, I'm not really being too creative with it because I'm always scared that I'm going to like be the only one that's just.
Well, that absolutely wasn't the case. I just didn't know like what the level of effort was going to look like. Everyone had to be dressed up to go. Like that was like it said on the ticket, like you have to be dressed up to go to this. So everyone.
But because.
Yeah.
But because you like put so much effort in, you guys won prizes, didn't you? Like, you won first place.
You won first
See, that's also that's like also the awesome thing. It's like you at one point you're like, oh, we put way too much effort into this, and then on the other end you're like, oh, but we won so many prizes because we put so much effort into this.
And so the group that runs this, it's the Misfits Ball in Galveston, Texas, and which we've talked about before, notoriously haunted. Town because of the Great Storm of 1900, but they were like, oh my gosh, like you guys were so awesome, like I can't wait to see what you guys are gonna do next year, like they're already telling us like what the theme is so we can like plan it and everything, which is so funny. And so part of the prize, we got memberships to the Misfits crew.
What's that mean?
Down in like on the Gulf Coast and like particularly in New Orleans, they have all these like Mardi Gras crews. That's like K-R-E-W-E. And they're just like groups of people that will like put on parade floats and do events and stuff like that.
Oh, that's so fun. So
we've become members of this crew, at least for this year. And so we're allowed to go do the 4th of July, the Christmas and the Mardi Gras float.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
You guys can totally take advantage of that.
I know. I don't know that we're going to do the Christmas one because we just won't have time. But
too soon. Yeah.
We've never been to Mardi Gras because we're East Coasters. So like we didn't ever do that. And we've been saying like, oh, we should totally go. We should do the one in Galveston because it'll be a little less intense than the one in New Orleans. And
now you're on be on a float for the parade.
Yeah. So we're already brainstorming ideas. So it was actually really fun. And it's kind of nice because they were very inclusive and like everybody came and talked to us and it was really nice. But we wouldn't have put in as much effort if we hadn't known that our friends who invited us, they put in a ton of effort too.
Oh.
And we were so close. We beat them by a hair, literally. So, but they've won before too. They always come up with these crazy costumes. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. And funny story, you said you thought we went as Zoltaire. One lady actually did, like she built a box and everything and it like lit up and stuff, and she won like the best like single person costume.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, and we were talking to her and she's like, oh, I'm actually a medium. I was like, oh shit. So it's a cool group of people, like very magical, mystical, alternative, you know.
It's
an inclusive, interesting group of people. So
that sounds really fun. It looked really fun too.
Yeah, it was. I'm so glad we went. Yeah, so that was that, and I made the Mothman jack-o'-lantern that I sent you a picture of, and I'll put it on the
group.
I just thought in honor of last year.
Yes. I was gonna ask you too over text if you put his big butt on the back side of it.
Where he was like, car, yeah, you should do that.
His butt on the back.
Should go do that after this. I'll go his just butt. Little butt. Yeah.
Yeah. We're actually carving pumpkins tomorrow because obviously tomorrow's Halloween, but our neighborhood always does like their Halloween event on Halloween.
Yeah.
And so we're right on the edge of where like all the action happens in the neighborhood. So this will be like the second year. We just have some friends over just want to hang out and then take some walking beers, walk into the neighborhood, you know, see all the sights and, you know, see how everybody's houses is, you know, decorated this year. And there's a shaving cream fight that always happens. Ooh. There's like a haunted woods over there that somebody like turns their house into like a haunted woods, I guess, because they have like woods around their house or whatever. So yeah, so just, you know, carve some pumpkins and then go walk into the neighborhood and walk around a bit and just kind of hang out.
That's fun though, because it's like a free Halloween event that you can literally just walk to, and it's in
your neighborhood. I mean, like everybody comes from like different neighborhoods around us and like parks on the street and like you know, wagons their kids in, but like the whole street is like lined with cars. And so you know, our friends that have kids that are not in the same neighborhood, they enjoy that we have access to a driveway and some parking around our house. So they just like come over early, park the car, and you know, take the kids out, and it's easy for them to get in and out. So yeah, we'll do that. And there was Fantasy Fest this past week. And when you were talking about your party and everything, I was like, oh, you should. I was thinking that you and Corey should come one year for Fantasy Fest because like our friend group always does the locals parade. So like you guys would be in the Facebook group and like, you know, sign up for whatever costume you want to make. And then we all meet downtown and we walk, you know, the strip of Duval Street for the parade and, you know, do that. And then like, there's also all these other things just throughout the week, like Tutu Tuesday, everybody wears tutus out and about, you know? So yeah, I think like anybody that likes Halloween, like I just tell them, I'm like, you should just come visit me in October during Fantasy Fest. I was like, you guys would love it. Like LDD, you know, like I'm not drinking that much because I have to work the whole week, but like, you guys should just come visit, you know. But it was fun. And we do benefit concerts with one of our partners. So I was there the Saturday before Fantasy Fest started. I guess it probably was like the day Fantasy Fest started. It was Saturday last week. And then I was there on Sunday, so yesterday, for another concert. And I was there like at the beginning of October too. So, you know, October is a busy time for like our benefit concert series, and we collect donations at the door. Probably made about like $700 in donations. So
nice.
I don't know. Yeah. It was nice, you know, a couple $100 each night. Every little bit helps. So yeah, I've really had like one day off this whole month. Well, not this whole month, one day off a week this whole month. So that's why when I texted you, I was like, we just got done cleaning. I just need to sit for a second. Can we like push it back 15 minutes?
Well, I had pumpkin ice cream in the freezer waiting for me. So I was like, that's fine. And Corey made shepherd's pie tonight because it was just felt right for the weather. Yes,
the weather.
And so now I have a little bit of red wine left over from that.
I have red wine too.
I know. I see that.
Remember back in the day when we started this, we're like, what are you drinking tonight?
And Well, I'm drinking the Ménage à Trois red blend because I'm super fancy.
That's my go-to, honestly. I'm like, it's $11. It's good. Like, it's a good go-to weeknight wine.
Yep.
The one I have right now actually is $4 from Winn-Dixie, and it's a red blend.
Wow.
And it's not that bad. But it Ménage à Trois, I would want that over this one. But but this'll do.
I usually go for a Pothic, but I also enjoy a Ménage à Trois. Those are probably the two ones I get most.
Yeah. I'll do Chloe as well. So like Chloe and Ménage à Trois are like my two go-to. Chloe's got a twist top, which I appreciate if I'm like, you know, on the go and I'm tired and I don't feel like the cork.
Yeah.
So, but you know, back in the day, those twist tops were like frowned upon. Now it's kind of like accepted, I guess, but I'll do those. And if I want to be fancy, I'll get a La Crema.
Ooh. If yeah. I were to be fancy with a white, I'll get a Matua.
Ooh.
New Zealand. Speaking of which, we have like an influx of people following us on Instagram. So if any of you are listening, welcome to the podcast. Don't judge us too harshly by our previous episodes. We had no fucking clue
what we're doing. We still don't really
know. Like even my brother was on an episode with us earlier this year, and he was like, how do you guys do any of this? It's amazing that you're able to put out what you put out because you guys are such a mess.
It's like called editing, even editing. That is how you're able to do it.
But he listens every week.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Hi, Ethan. My friend David also listens a lot too, and he messaged me the other day. I forget what, but it was like him and his girlfriend were listening to an episode, and he just messaged me about it. And I was like, oh, you listen? That's so nice. We just think our parents are the only people that listen.
Yeah. This is a private conversation.
Yeah. Everybody else is somehow allowed to listen to it, but we just assume that nobody else is listening.
Yeah, no one's listening. So welcome. We talk a lot at the beginning. So if you want to skip away to the story, honey, because that's totally fine. But you know, we like to have a relationship with our listeners that we don't realize exist.
Well, also this is like our catch up time for our friendship too. So people are kind of getting an insight to us as friends.
To our relationship as people.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like talking about Halloween is very on par for this podcast because I feel like we're always talking about spooky shit. But in particular, lately, it's spooky season. So I line up some spooky episodes.
Yes.
And it's funny because this week, I didn't really think this. I think this episode is freaky. It's spooky. There's not necessarily anything to me that's like supernatural about it.
Yeah.
But apparently it's a fucking like rock folk song that I didn't know about.
Tell you what, when Alex told me that and he freaked out, I was like, you know this? And he's like, of course I do. It's Floyd. And I don't even know his name right now. What is his name? Floyd Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, it's in Mammoth Cave, isn't it? And I was like, well, it says Sand Cave here. He's like, that's probably an extension of Mammoth Cave.
He's correct.
And he was like already going into it. And I was like, okay. Like, you know, he talks to me about our podcast every time we go on. He's like, oh, you know, what are you talking about this time? Or like, what did you guys talk about today? Whatever, you know. And I tell him, and every time he's just like, oh, that's cool. But tonight he was like, mind blown. He's like, Floyd Collins? Mammoth Cave? Like, have you heard this song? He's like, babe, this song slaps. You gotta listen to it. And I was like, okay.
So I think that we should listen to it after I tell the story, because you're right, you don't want spoilers. So today we're going to talk about Floyd Collins and Sand Cave. And if you've listened to this episode or this podcast before, you know that probably some of the scariest episodes that we have are cave based. Like,
every single caves.
One is terrifying.
Hate them. Yes.
Did you hate them before the podcast, though?
I paid no attention to them before the podcast. Mm-hmm. And then you started talking to me about caves, and I was like, oh, I have discovered that I absolutely hate caves.
Yeah. Unlocked a new fear that you didn't know that you had.
Yeah, that's essentially what happened. Exactly.
You'll never look at Luray Caverns the same again.
Honestly, last time Alex and I were home, I showed him Luray Caverns, and in my head, I'm like, this feels really safe, but I know that shit happens. I was like, I'm a little nervous down here right now, you know?
Yeah.
It's cool, but at the same time, things happen. You just never know.
They do. And that's the thing about show caves, though, is that you are, unless like there's a ridiculous amount of rain or something, and I think in the United States, they would close down a cave if it was like super prone to flooding. If it was a show cave, like if something happened, like if a collapse happened, they know where you are, like you're with a tour guide. They have every inch of that fucking showcase mapped out, you know.
Yeah.
There's backup lights down there. They probably have like supplies stored places. It's not like that with the unexplored caves though. And
yes.
Right. That's what we talk about.
What I think about too when we were in Luray Caverns was like, imagine being the people that discovered Luray Caverns or just any mm-hmm. show cave that's out there now. You're yeah. just doing what you're doing for work, and then all of a sudden, do you just fall in
mm-hmm.
or you just keep going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. It's mind boggling to me.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what we're fucking talking about today.
Oh, okay. Cool. Let's get into it.
Like an uncanny ability to like predict exactly what we're gonna talk about. It's really
I like to
fun.
Think that I have like a I like to think that I have a good like gut sense, you know.
Yeah,
my
yeah.
intuition. I got mm-hmm. a good intuition.
Yeah. So now that we kind of have an idea, yes, this takes place in Mammoth Cave National Park, which is probably our biggest and most famous show cave in the United States, I would mm-hmm. think.
That's
because it is a national park and it does have some really cool features, and it is absolutely a show cave, but it wasn't always. And so we are going to get into that today.
Cool.
So let's first talk about Floyd here. He was born on June 20th, 1887 in Logan County, Kentucky, to Lee Collins and Martha Jane Burnett. And from a young age, he developed a hobby of exploring caves, which littered the county in which his family farm sat. So Logan County is cave county, basically, mm-hmm. in Kentucky. So by the age of 20 in 1917, Floyd discovered Crystal Cave beneath his father's farmland. So these caves were just like hanging out underneath people's property.
Okay.
And people would like stumble across entrances.
Yeah.
And
that's
be like,
crazy.
Oh shit, there's like this crazy network of like these amazing
underground tunnel systems.
Yeah, and like these amazing formations. So he quickly began developing the cave into a tourist attraction, as the cave boasted unique helictite and gypsum cave formations, leading to the name Crystal Cave. Which sounds beautiful.
It does sound beautiful.
So during the early 1900s, cave tourism and show caves were like a very lucrative and competitive business, because people were just starting to discover these crazy cool cave systems and wanting to see them for reasons other than like mining or something like that. So due to aggressive and highly suspicious practices between rival cave owners, the era became known as the Cave Wars in Kentucky Cave County.
Nice.
This is a real fucking thing that I didn't know about until I started looking into this. So these wars, and the quote-unquote wars, because like they didn't kill people, they weren't like out shooting people, but it was like an overly aggressive like business kind of war, I guess. Yeah.
Yes.
So these wars started when communities sprang up around the famous Mammoth Cave in the mid-1800s, and other smaller caves were discovered nearby. It was very lucrative to local landowners to have a successful cave touring business, and the smaller caves were often smaller and showier. So they often had, you know, they're smaller, they're easier to tour, but they also had like more interesting crystal structures because they hadn't necessarily been damaged by a bunch of people like walking in and out, you know, of these cave formations.
Yes.
Which can damage cave systems, surprisingly, especially mm-hmm. those like very delicate formations.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they didn't know the science about that back then. Like, oh yeah, if you touch the stalactite too many times, it'll like wear away. Like the oils on your hands will like
wear it away. And then it'll break off. And then things get uneven and crumble.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So location of the caves was really important though, because if a cave wasn't near the stagecoach lines to Mammoth Cave, or like later in the 1900s, the Mammoth Cave Railroad, the business was unlikely to survive. And that's just because, like, it was kind of first come, first serve. Like, as soon as the tourists arrived, they'd, like, go to the closest fucking, you know, cave, basically.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So the cave wars reached a feverish pitch in 1915 when a man, a businessman, George Morrison, found a connecting passage, or a quote-unquote back door, to the now famous Mammoth Cave through his property.
Wow, so imagine that. That's like a gold mine back then.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So while he was accessing the cave illegally, nobody could really stop him.
Whoops.
Because, like, you'd have to go in from Mammoth Cave and, like, catch him and arrest him, like, you know, but then yeah, you're on his property, right? So, like,
yeah, like, you can't go on his property to arrest him.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I guess you probably could if you had a warrant, but you know what I mean. It's like, you're not like stepping onto his property and then exploring and being like, hey, found you here. Can't take you in.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it was like 1915 and like
no rules back then.
Yeah.
Absolutely no rules.
Yeah. They were just, they were wilding out there. So at this point, cave owners started battling with marketing, with the roadsides lined with competing signage, and solicitors known as cave cappers lined the highways to try to draw tourists into their caves. And they were called that because they wore like a specific kind of hat or cap, I guess.
Oh, okay.
It looks in the picture that I have below.
Like paperboy hats or something like that?
It looks like almost like an army hat or like a policeman hat to me. Because if you just scroll down to that picture underneath this paragraph, you can see.
Oh, and I see.
And they just be sitting in these sheds along the main drag.
Yeah, what is that kind of hat? That kind of looks like a mix between like a train conductor hat.
Uh-huh.
It looks like leather.
Like a policeman kind of.
But also like policeman hat.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know what those hat kind of hats are called. But they called them cave cappers because they all wore these kinds of hats. And they basically just sit in these sheds on the highway and try to draw tourists to their caves just by being loud and obnoxious, I guess, you know. So
do your mid-Atlantic accent trying to call somebody into a cave.
Hey, you want to come see Crystal Cave here? You see?
Yeah, I'm sold.
The best gypsum formations you'll ever see in your life.
Take all my money.
So while the cave wars did not end in the formation of Mammoth Cave National Park in 1941, a big event did change the way Kentucky's cave country was viewed. I can bet you can guess what that event might be. It's the one we're about to talk about.
The event that... Wait, sorry, I was looking at hats. The event that changed Kentucky in the way that it was viewed?
That changed the way Kentucky's cave county was viewed and cave tourism was viewed.
Oh, it was about this guy, obviously.
Yeah.
But I don't know what happened to him.
Too busy looking at hats.
I found a photo of like 30 hats and I was like trying to go through all the pictures and they have like labels underneath them. So I was trying to name the hat that we were just talking about. I was listening, but I was also looking at hats. Sorry.
This is more important. We gotta know what kind of hat. Did you figure out?
Well, no, I haven't. But you know me when I'm like, what's that called? That like it just it takes over my brain and I need to figure it out.
It's that ADHD. It'll get you.
It really is. It will get you. Undiagnosed ADHD will get you. Anyway, yes, this guy had an incident and it has changed Sand Cave and Cave County in Kentucky forevermore. Yes,
forevermore.
Tell me more.
So by the 1960s, much of the private owned cave businesses had dried out and only the national park remained. But when this happened, things were popping. Unfortunately, Crystal Cave, the cave he had found on his parents' property, made little profit due to its remote location on Flint Ridge Road and visitors would pass by many other caves showing similar views and choose to do those instead. Floyd knew there was another cave located on Beasley Doyle's property known as Sand Cave, which was situated on Cave City Road, where many of the show caves were. So Floyd entered into an agreement with Beasley Doyle to both explore the cave and share profits if the cave proved worthy to be advertised in tourism. So it was kind of a win-win because this guy was like a farmer. He wasn't like a caver or anything. So he wasn't about to like try to go explore that. Probably because he was like, it's dark down there.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I would not want to do that.
No. And these guys were just no gear, really. Just going in there.
Yeah, I don't understand how they did that, but they did.
So the cave was said to have a magnificent subterranean coliseum of about 80 feet high, only 300 feet from the cave's entrance. So it could be a big draw for tourists. So Floyd Collins entered the cave on January 30th, 1925, in the morning with a single kerosene lantern. So this is the gear we have.
I was going to say, he's not seeing very far in front of him with that kerosene lantern.
Not to mention, kerosene runs out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I'm already predicting what's happening.
He found the cave offered many challenges, including our favorite tight squeezes.
God, fuck that.
Including one he could only inch through on his stomach with one arm stretched ahead of him, pushing the lantern and the other at his side.
Okay, this is where I have to stop for a second. And again, every episode that we talk about caves and we talk about squeezing through places like that, my initial thought is, why are you even going there if you can't fit there? Like, I don't know. I wouldn't do that. I would be like, I'm like, oh, this is it for me. I'm done. Single kerosene lantern, like, that's going to fit through that thing too? Like, come on.
Apparently it did. I mean, I don't know how big it was. I don't have pictures. So
I'm telling everybody right now that if I go into a cave with some friends and then one of them is like, oh, you just have to like suck in to squeeze through this and like hold your breath for like a minute to get through it. And then you'll be out on the other side and it's good. I'll be like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to go back to the car. I'll wait for you there.
Yeah, like,
you let me know when you're out. I'll come get you. But I'm not fucking doing that.
Yeah. I feel like with extreme cavers, there's just like that part of their brain that tells you, hey, maybe don't do this. Just isn't like connected, you know?
And like, good for them, you know, like they probably enjoy life a hell of a lot more than I do. But like, I don't know. I like to be able to live. My anxiety would not have that. That's just also what it is too.
Yeah.
Like I would suck in and then I would immediately start having a panic attack and then I would be freaking out and that's then I would get stuck because then I would exhale and then I would be stuck.
And that's how a lot of people get stuck in these kinds of squeezes. I just couldn't fit because my titties and my boob or my butt's too big. So
you're a voluptuous woman.
Just wouldn't work out for me. I don't even need fear. Just, I'm not going to fit through that. It's not working.
I respect that people think that way, but I just, at the same time, I'm like, how do you think that way? My brain goes back and forth. It's like a ping pong match.
Have you seen some of those like caving videos on TikTok? I'm sure I've sent some like
you probably have
modern day guys doing this, and it's like it makes me cold and clammy every single time I watch them.
You did send me one, and I think I messaged you, and I was like, I got 30 seconds in, and I had to turn it off.
Yeah,
like, I couldn't do it. I was like, this is making me feel really uncomfortable right now.
This guy brings his son, who's like maybe middle school, early high school, like he's young.
Yeah.
And the kid will go in first because he's smaller.
Oh no!
And like that's what he likes to do, and I'm just like, could you imagine?
What if your kid gets stuck?
I know.
like, you can't reach him.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. That mm-hmm. would be off. I don't know. There's this Instagram profile that I follow, and it's called Bad Way to Go, or it's called A Bad Way to Go.
You know, they follow us.
Yes, I do. Yeah. If they're listening, I love you guys. They do some really awesome, like, illustrations of some really morbid stories.
Yes.
But it's, and they kind of put like a comedic spin on it too, which mm-hmm. is, you know, but I had, this is obviously a side tangent turning into right now, but mm-hmm. I had a thought today about how much death on our social medias occurs, and like, we just let it happen.
Uh-huh.
Like, we just like watch people die on mm-hmm. social media
mm-hmm.
all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, that I just saw somebody die right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was on Instagram this morning and I saw how like a former NHL player had died because he had fallen on the ice and in his collision got a blade to his neck. And so like, I was like Googling like the guy and like the incident. There's a fucking video out there of it.
Of course.
And I'm like, cool. So I just saw someone die. Like, what? And then I was scrolling on TikTok one day. I was scrolling on TikTok the other day, and I saw a video of this like college kid who was on this cruise, and he jumps overboard at night, and then a fucking mm-hmm. shark eats him.
Mm-mm.
Like, and it's just like, that's like, on your feed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, holy crap. Like, we see so much morbid stuff on a daily mm-hmm. basis, and it's just like acceptable now.
Yeah.
Like, the trauma response is definitely like not mm-hmm. there anymore. You're just like, oh, I just watched someone die. Cool. Like, whatever. How the hell do you do that? Like, how does that happen?
To be fair, people used to go to public hangings for like funsies. So I think we've always done this.
Yeah, that's true.
But the morbid still, fascination's like, always been just, there.
Well, it's just one of those things. Like, I don't want to see someone dying on my For You page. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just scrolling, trying to decompress, and now I'm watching somebody like fight for their life. Are you kidding me? Like, I don't want that.
Yes, I think I saw something like that the other day. These two people fell off of, it was like this very intense cliff with all these waves and stuff, and they were being reckless, but at the same time, like a wave took them both off, and they show the whole fucking video, and they never saw those people again. And I was like, cool.
Yeah, like I just watched someone die. Oh my God.
So we're going to continue contributing to this phenomenon. Something wrong with you. I don't want to watch it. But I'm going to talk about it until I'm blue in the face. So,
yeah.
So let's get back to our boy Floyd here. So he's going through a squeeze. He's got the lantern in front of him. It's at this point, the lantern begins to flicker, signifying that it's running out of fuel. So he knew it would be extremely dangerous to lose his only light source.
I have a question. At least
he's aware. So he reluctantly began to return. So as he turned back through this tight squeeze, his foot dislodged a 27-pound rock that wedged his ankle in place.
So I have a question. Do you know how much time you have left on your kerosene lantern when it starts to flicker like that?
Clearly, probably not.
Not very long.
Time. I don't know. I don't know that much about 1927 technology.
You're just super smart, so I just was curious if you knew.
No idea. I imagine probably not long.
I would think like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's like what I would think.
Yeah. So I don't know what his plan was once that went out, like how that was going to go.
Crawl backwards, hopefully. I don't know. Just like literally retrace your steps.
I guess. So yeah, his foot dislodged this 27-pound rock that wedged his ankle in place. He tried everything to remove his foot from underneath the rock, but due to his awkward position in that squeeze, he could not. He attempted to free himself, but he ended up burying himself up to his waist in rubble in this squeeze, in this tight passage.
Oh, no.
So one of my favorite quotes from this whole ordeal was from one of the journalists, William Skeets Miller. He was trapped in a stone straitjacket.
Oh, God, that sounds miserable.
60 feet beneath the Earth's surface.
I hate that for him.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. I don't even want to think about that.
Well, we're gonna. So
okay. Cool.
Sweet dreams. So the following morning, neighbors realized that Floyd did not come home and set out to look for him. So at least people knew where he was. Like in a general sense. So they found his coat hanging outside of Sand Cave. But because the cave passageways were so tight and narrow, the only person who could reach him was a 17-year-old boy, Jewel Estes. Aww. Yeah. So Jewel actually managed to climb back far enough to communicate with Floyd. And it was then that they realized that he was trapped. So once it was discovered that Floyd was trapped in the cave, the neighbors notified Floyd's family, and his brothers, Homer and Marshall, came bringing Floyd food and water and beginning the rescue attempt. And we have a very scary and haunting picture of Floyd trapped in the cave. And this is probably one of the most famous pictures of the ordeal.
It looks like he could get out from that picture. Like, it looks like he's just posing.
Uh-huh.
That's freaky. I don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in the following days, the rescue attempts began in earnest, as Homer attempted to dig Floyd free with no success. Locals began gathering around the entrance of the cave to see what was happening with Floyd, and Marshall offered $500 to whoever could free his brother. Many volunteers bring food and drink down to Floyd to relieve the brothers, but they get freaked out in the dark passageways because they're not cavers. And they would just like stash the items in cracks and crevices and like book it out of there. And so the provisions like would never get to him.
Oh, no.
And so like the brothers would come down like hours later and find all this stuff and be like, shit, so he hasn't been drinking, he hasn't been eating this whole time. Like,
that's kind of fucked up on those volunteers' part, you know?
But at the same time, I'm like, I get it.
I know, I get it, but also, like, kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, at least tell them, I would hope that they at least told them, like, that they didn't get in that bar. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But,
ugh. Yeah, just at least admit your mistake or your failure.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a man's life, you know?
Yeah. Like, say, hey, I couldn't get that far, but I put it here if you want to, like, go in further and take it to him.
Mm-hmm.
Something. I don't know.
Because I don't think a lot of people are cut out for this kind of stuff. So.
No.
Right.
There's, like, a small percentage of the population that can do that.
Right. So, by February 2nd, Floyd was in rough shape due to the conditions of the cave and the lack of food and water. He was shaky, cold, numb, and experienced periods of stupor and lucidity. News had begun to travel, however, and journalists began to arrive, including a journalist from Louisville, from the Louisville Courier Journal, named William Skeets Miller. He was called Skeets due to the fact that he was, quote unquote, not much bigger than a mosquito. Because of this, because of his small stature and how thin he was able to enter the cave and actually speak to Floyd. And I think he was one of the very few journalists who was able to do so. But upon seeing the situation Floyd was in, he forgot about the news story and began assisting in the rescue attempt instead.
Oh, that's a good guy.
Yeah, he's one of the few shining heroes in this whole ordeal. Mm-hmm. So Miller says of the experience, my flashlight revealed a face on which is written suffering of many long hours, because Collins has been in agony every conscious moment since he was trapped at 10 o'clock Friday morning. I saw the purple of his lips, the pallor of his face, and realized that something must be done before long if this man is to live, he wrote to the Chicago Tribune.
Oh my God.
So I'm going to give basically a day by day, which you can find all of this information on the Mammoth Cave National Park website.
They have, oh, wow. Okay.
A really awesome timeline, basically, of everything that's happened. Or happened in this event. It's pretty much one of the only sources I use because I trust the National Park Service.
And, oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
It's like so detailed and accurate. So at this point, Lieutenant Robert Burden, who was from the Specialist Police Fire Rescue Team in the area, arrived on the scene and attempted to free Floyd by using a harness around his chest to pull him out, which just resulted in a lot of pain and no success. So a caving buddy of Collins's, John Gerald, also arrived attempting to dig him out, again with no success. About 200 people had gathered outside the cave and began erecting tents, one to sell hot coffee and snacks and one for first aid. By February 3rd, the story became the top in the nation, and rifts began developing between rescuers. Three men tried to convince caver John Gerald to let them chisel at the rock above Floyd, but Gerald was convinced that it would do more harm than good and didn't allow them to move forward. Henry St. George Tucker Carmichael, which, first of all, what a name.
I was just thinking the same thing. I was like, wow, what a name.
What a fucking name. So he's the superintendent of the Kentucky Rock Asphalt Company. So he arrived with workers, and this is kind of the first attempt at a truly organized rescue. So they scouted out a rescue shaft location, planning to like dig a rescue shaft basically to reach him, kind of like the Chilean miners, that very much giving that. But the other rescuers were concerned about a rock collapse that would kill him, right?
Because if you're
digging like near him or right above him, you could
cave-in. Like if you're chiseling away at the top, all that pressure is going to keep coming down and down and down. You know what I mean? So
so you have to be accurate as fuck.
Yeah, and then like I guess you could try to chisel away at the sides, but then if it's like at a certain angle, then it's still the pressure from the top is just going to keep crumbling down on to the side too.
Yeah,
it's it's a really shitty situation to be in.
Yeah, and you know you have to be an engineer, I think, to. And the other issue is he's still got a rock on his foot that they can't even reach. And that's the real reason why he's stuck, right? So Carmichael eventually agrees that maybe digging a rescue shaft is not the best idea at the moment. So he has the men begin like moving rocks from the cave passageway instead to make like other rescue attempts easier. So the journalist Skeets and the others rigged an electrical system with light bulbs and a 32-volt generator to allow Floyd to have light and warmth in the cave and also to help with rescuers. Lieutenant Burden returned to attempt another pulling scheme, but Gerald got in a huge fight with him about the best plan of action, so this doesn't happen. At this point, most of the rubble had been removed from around Floyd's body, and the idea of using jacks to prop up the rocks is being discussed. Unfortunately, when the plan was put into action, the small jacks continued to slip, and so no further progress was made. Floyd convinces the rescuers to get some rest and come try again in the morning. At this point, tensions are arising between outsiders and locals, and the National Guard is brought in to assist with crowd control.
I bet.
And this is like, I think only a couple days after he gets trapped.
Yeah.
What did I say? It's January 30th.
Yeah. And that's February 3rd at that point.
Yeah. So February 4th, Floyd was actually in better shape than he was over the past 3 days. as he had finally gotten enough food and water. The jack idea was attempted again, but the cave was showing signs of crumbling, indicating the passageway was unstable.
Hmm.
It was thought that both the jack and the number of people rubbing against the walls and creating body heat that would, and you know, with the oils and just brushing past mm-hmm. all those things we were talking about with like show caves and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this increased the chance of cave collapse.
Oh my God, that's scary.
Uh-huh. Debris began falling, and there was officially a cave collapse separating the teams from Floyd. Gerald attempts to dig out the collapse, but another collapse happens in this passage, so Floyd is now cut off from the rescuers.
Oh no, that's not good.
So I have a diagram of this situation at this point. And you can see approximate location of Floyd Collins all the way at the bottom mm-hmm. of this entire thing.
Oh, he's like down the elbow
mm-hmm.
of something. It's not even like he's kind of like on the path. He's like down and in
mm-hmm.
off the beaten path.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
So super cool, chill situation.
So like he literally is blocked in there at this point.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. So yeah, he's cut off from everybody and food and water and light.
Well, you know how way long ago one of our first early episodes was of that one spelunker who unfortunately passed away, and then they sealed up the cave,
the Nutty Putty cave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like nature just kind of took its course and sealed up the cave for him.
Yeah. But would it have if people had
all those
been
people
going
weren't
down
going
there.
In and out? Yeah,
yeah,
probably not. I don't know. I don't know anything about caves, honestly. I stay far away from those things as possible.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue on because the rescue effort is not going away anytime soon because there are so many eyes on this now. It's become, you know, a big national phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So February 5th, National Guard Brigadier General Henry Denhart was placed in command of the rescue. Carmichael begins supervising the creation of a 6x6 foot vertical shaft to rescue Floyd. The only tools allowed were picks or shovels because anything stronger may cause the cave to collapse on Floyd. Which picks and shovels to cut through rock, it's not a lot of mm-hmm. strength. It's going to take a while. A workforce of 75 men worked round the clock on the shaft if they were actually to reach him in time. Considering that now he, you know, doesn't have access to food, probably doesn't have a great access to water source. Like, he can lick the cave walls, but
do you think he's licking the cave walls though?
I mean, I feel like, yeah. Well, and we'll get into why I think that. So by February 6th, Floyd has been trapped for a week and work on the shaft progresses at a snail's pace. Although it has reached 17 feet deep, but remember he's 60 feet below the surface.
Oh
yeah. So by February 7th, the crowd is becoming uncontrollable outside. So the National Guard erects a barbed wired fence around the site. Several people try to look for other entrances to gain access to Floyd from like another passageway, but it's unsuccessful. February 8th was nicknamed Carnival Sunday since 10,000 people are at the cave. 10,000.
That's an event.
Yeah.
For sure.
So they're there in hopes to see rescuers pull Floyd out. Vendors are selling food, alcohol, booze, and the atmosphere is more cheerful than morose, like visitors are at a county fair instead of a harrowing rescue.
Yeah, that's a little, I don't know, that's kind of messed up. But
it
then again,
is.
Back to your point, we would literally go to hangings. So here we are, literally attending a crisis event.
Yeah, but like if you compare this event to like the Thai soccer team cave rescue. Like, there were tons of people there, but they were all like, we're going to rescue these kids. Like, there weren't food vendors in the sense of, like, people were volunteering their time making food for the rescuers. They and, like, the people working there. They were, like,
And also, like, I kind of took that more or less as, like, the friends and family were on standby waiting to hear what was going to happen and, like, you know, ready to go if something did happen. And then, yeah, there was tents that were keeping, you know, the other rescuers, like, shaded and, like, you know, away from the elements. And then there was food vendors there giving food to everybody because, like, you know, it was for the rescuers. It wasn't, like, an event. It was, like, here we are, like, trying to do our part to, like, feed the people that need the energy to go in and rescue these boys.
Yeah, because that was a massive effort. There were thousands of people there, but they were all there with that goal of, like, we need to save these kids. Here, it's, like, oh, we're going to take advantage of the fact that there's a ton of people here, and we're going to make some munty. Which feels, again, very, like, 1920s, like, and the whole, like, cave war, like, oh, we're going to advertise the hell out of our cave, and we're going to steal customers from everybody else. It, I feel like it's very in that same realm, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
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 And it's creepy. It's really creepy. So that's the part that creeps me out more so than the fact that he's trapped in this cave is, like, people were, like, cool with doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the 1915s.
I gotta feed your kids.
The 1915s. It's the early 1900s. God, that's a better way to say that. Jesus Christ. What is wrong with me?
So the shaft at this point is still only 23 feet deep. So it's only a little over a third of how deep it has to be to get to him. Okay. Journalists began making accusations that not enough was done at the beginning to save Floyd. And other rumors arise saying it's just a publicity stunt to try to get people to come visit Floyd's crystal cave. And he's just pretending to be trapped.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a picture beneath that paragraph. That's, like, the scene. Yeah, it's giving all of what I was saying, basically. So by February 9th, the view of the whole ordeal is very negative from everybody. And there are four main theories of what is going on with this situation. So one, it's a hoax to lure tourists to Kentucky's cave country, which I get that there's a lot of publicity, but if I was somebody who wanted to go tour a cave and this happened, I'd be like, no. Be like, never mind. I'll go to the fucking, like, Adirondacks or something. I'm not doing this.
Anywhere but a cave, honestly.
Yeah. Because this sounds awful. Two, this is fun. Floyd was murdered by someone unknown in the cave, and he's dead. But they're trying to cover it up.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Three, food and water are being purposely withheld from him so he will die, so I don't have to rescue him. And the cave-in didn't actually happen. And then four, Floyd is still alive and travels out of the cave and back each night, and it's his publicity stunt.
That's, I mean, so I hear the publicity stunt thing, and the only reason why I kind of understand that is because of two stories. So one story is I heard from Bobby Bones of the Bobby Bones Show, and when he was first starting out in Nashville, he put a billboard up that said, "Go away, Bobby Bones." And then, like, everybody started listening to him, like, who's this Bobby Bones guy? Like, why do we want him to go away? And then now look at him, right? So it was, like, negative. Like, he made a negative ad for himself, and it turned out to be a positive impact. And then before we got on, I was on Instagram scrolling, and I saw, you know, the whole Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce relationship thing. I saw a post about how, I guess, his publicist, like, pretty much, like, negatively talked about Taylor Swift. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, in my head, I was like, that's really interesting that, like, his publicist would say that. Like, I wonder why. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the comments, and then one of the comments was like, this is a PR professional. Mm-hmm. She knows what she's doing. And I was like, mm-hmm. oh, actually, like, that's mm-hmm. that's true. Like, you know,
yeah.
like, Travis Kelce's, like, PR manager backtalks his current girlfriend, and everybody's gonna be like, oh my god, what's going mm-hmm. on? And like, mm-hmm. clickbait, 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 you know?
Yeah.
So I get where the thought process is of like, mm-hmm. it's like a marketing ploy.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think anybody in their right mind would ever risk their life for a marketing ploy. So
right.
There's also that.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting, like, all of the theories, and like, they're like conspiracy theories, essentially, are very much the same as all the conspiracy theories we make up for, like, shit that happens today. Like, we yeah. don't change as people. They're like, oh,
yeah.
it's a hoax. It's a fraud. Oh, they're
fake news. Like,
they're trying to kill him on purpose, and they're just not yeah. telling us. Or it's true crime. Right? Like, those are kind of our go-tos.
Like, it's been over 100 years and we still have not changed.
It's kind of a nice thing to know that we've always just been like this, and it's not like a new thing, you know?
We've always been a little insane.
Yeah. It makes me feel a little bit better about how the world is today, but at the same time, I'm like, oh my god, we haven't changed from the 20s. What are we fucking doing?
So. Yeah, well, I mean, we have in some ways, but you know, we but have rights now.
At our core. Hey, we had the right to vote by 1925, so we were doing good, Haley.
Yeah, that's true.
5 years. We had the vote, or the right to vote, for 5 whole years.
So fucking weird to me that was like 100 years ago.
Yeah. It's nuts. I know. So anyway, moving on February 10th, a military court convened in Cave City to clear up suspicions of criminal activity and disprove that Floyd's entrapment was a hoax, so that they could clear all that shit up. And part of the reason, like, there were only a certain amount of people, like, number of people that could actually get to him. And mm-hmm. so it's not like everybody could see, like, oh yeah, he's totally trapped in there.
Yeah.
There's only like a handful of people that could actually get to him and talk to him.
So. And I imagine, like, at this point in time, like, the weight of the rocks on his body is like, it's like constant pressure. So it's just mm-hmm. only, I don't know, like, in my brain, it kind of is like the equivalent of like a hydraulic press, mm-hmm. where it's like, it just keeps pushing down on him.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, hour by hour, his bones are like breaking.
I imagine
they are broken already.
I imagine he's like numb all the time.
Yeah. Like, nerves are nerve damage and everything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Taken effect. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and at this point, nobody's reaching him, right? Because cave-in.
Yeah.
So rain is slows down progress on the shaft. By February 11th, a cold front had moved in and snow fell, and the temperature dropped into the 20s, hindering the rescue effort. By February 12th, Floyd had been trapped for 13 days and had not...
Can you imagine that? I was just thinking about, like I was being empathetic, and I was putting myself in his shoes, and I just was like, picturing myself trapped in a cave with both entrances blocked in, just sitting there like, well, this is how I die.
You'd start going crazy.
Yeah, I would. I would probably die from a panic attack before dying of that, like, starvation. Fair. Honestly.
Like, fair. he had not eaten in over a week at this point, ever since that cave collapse occurred, which you can survive eating for like a month, I think, even longer than that. We've talked about it before.
We have, but do you really, like, a month without mm-hmm. food?
Yeah.
God.
You
I don't know. I know how my body feels after like 3 hours without food. I can't imagine a month. Like, when I get hungry and I wait too long to eat, I get nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not hungry anymore. I'm just mm-hmm. nauseous.
But you got to consider, like, it depends on the person, right? If you have more stored fats, you're going to go for longer.
Yeah.
If you are fit, it's not going to take as long because you don't have as much stored energy.
Yeah.
And the hunger, like, yeah, it's going to fucking suck. But hunger itself will not kill you straight out. It's eventually when you run out of all those stored nutrients that your body has. And we've built that as animals because back in the day, we didn't always have access to food resources all the time. And mm-hmm. so, and that's the case for many wild animals today. And so it's a necessity. And so that's why we can go without food for so much longer than we can without water.
But water is like a 4-day thing, right?
Mm-hmm. That's why I think he was licking the cave walls.
Oh, because he's been alive for like 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also people gave him water up until what day?
Yeah, but if he hasn't had food for a week, that also means he hasn't had water for a week.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But like how much water... These are questions you don't know the answers to, but how much water do you think he's like really like getting out of licking the wall?
Again, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know that, you don't know. I'm just like I'm thinking back out loud. To
like the Thai soccer team rescue that we talked about in an earlier episode. That's how they survived because they licked water off the cave walls. Caves are very damp environments, particularly maybe not so much out west, but on the east coast in the Appalachians, they're very damp. It's been raining, like
condensation. You know. Yeah.
Yep. That's my, I may be talking out of my ass, but we're going to move forward. So he's been trapped without access to food or water for a week. The shaft, though, is now 48 feet, but needs constant shoring to avoid collapse. On February 15th, the shaft reached 52 feet, and on the 14th, 55 feet. So they're like 5 feet away from reaching the level where he's at. But they're digging straight over him. They're digging like adjacent to
the side. Yeah.
Right. To try to
make sure it doesn't crumble in on him.
Mm-hmm. So they were so desperate to reach Floyd at this point. So they began digging laterally to reach him faster and to prevent the sides of the shaft from slumping. Due to heavy rain, there was now 2 feet of standing water at the bottom of the shaft that needed to be pumped out constantly.
Oh my God.
By the end of the night on the 15th, the lateral tunnel was within several feet of Floyd's approximate location. Finally, by 1:30 p.m. on the 16th, they broke through to a sand cave passage where Floyd was found dead.
Oh, that just stinks.
The cause of his death was exposure, exhaustion, and starvation, obviously.
Yeah.
It's estimated that he has been dead, though, for only 24 hours.
Gosh, that's so sad.
Like, we know
like if the rain didn't happen, they could have kept going and probably saved him.
Mm-hmm. Or if the cold front hadn't moved in.
God, that's so sad.
Yeah. So that's how we know that he was alive for a while down there, though.
Yeah. That's so sad. They were so close. Ugh, that's the worst.
Yeah. So they decided to leave Floyd's body inside as his leg was still trapped and the rescue shaft was slumping at an alarming rate.
Oof.
Rescuers decided they didn't want to risk any more lives. So Sand Cave was sealed with Floyd's body inside. But months later, in more safe circumstances, the body was removed for a formal burial closer to the family's home near Crystal Cave.
Oh, that's well, nice. Here's... He gets to rest in peace.
Yeah.
Maybe not? Mm-hmm. Why'd you say it like that?
So, yeah, that's not the end of the story.
Oh,
the end of the shenanigans. So, The media circus and the story of Floyd captivated the attention of the country and brought many changes to the community and cave country. Skeets Miller, the journalist who helped with the rescue effort, earned the Pulitzer Prize from his sand cave interview of Floyd and his dive into the rescue efforts. So good for him, because he, again, was one of the few like actual heroes in all of this. But this was not the end for Floyd, or rather Floyd's body, because we didn't have the same views of how to treat dead bodies back then as we do now. So later in 1927, a man called Dr. Harry Thomas purchased Crystal Cave from Floyd's parents, exhumed Floyd's body that was on the property, and put him in a glass-topped coffin in the center of the cave to draw in tourists.
Oh, that's really messed up.
Uh-huh.
I don't like that.
Fucking sideshow.
That's not cool at all.
And like,
that's so disrespectful. Uh-huh. Like, to him, the family, yeah. Just everybody. That's disrespectful. I don't like that.
But like, shit like this used to happen all the time back then. This is not the only story that's like that. Like, it's interesting that with him, because he was such a well-known figure from what had happened, that it happened to him. But like, they used to put like criminals' bodies on display all the time, or like if they found an unknown person died in a weird way, or like, you know, sometimes they'd find mummified bodies and they'd be like, let's put it on display, and like, oh, it's just some guy who died. Yeah,
that's how you get haunted.
It is how you get haunted. Mm-hmm.
You gotta respect the dead.
Yep. So the headstone for this glass coffin stated, the greatest cave explorer ever known. You know, so it's like, we're honoring him, but here, look at this like decaying corpse, basically.
Yeah, it's like, that's not really honoring him. It's kind of like hypocritical, or whatever that grammatical word is.
Mm-hmm. So even stranger, a visitor attempted to steal Collins's body.
Get out. Why?
Twice. Two strangers. And in 1929, the second person actually did manage to steal his corpse.
Why?
Because this whole idea of like putting bodies on display as a sideshow thing.
And they were like, I want this dead guy in my home for notoriety. Well,
to take on the road and have tourists come and give me quarters to view his body.
That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. So the authorities managed to track him down, but Floyd's body lost a leg in the process, and they have no idea where it is.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's not in great shape. I mean, this is like...
Honestly, like, if I was Floyd, I would be haunting every person that did me wrong this entire time.
Right. Yeah. So that's why I'm like...
no way anybody was left untouched spiritually for the rest of their lives.
And that's why I'm like, look, if you get haunted in Mammoth Cave or Sand Cave, like...
that's a generational curse brought onto you. You got to go back in the book and figure out who did you wrong.
Yep. Yep. And also, you know what? Let Floyd do what he wants to do. Let Floyd do what he wants to do. Yeah, if he's going to haunt you, he's going to haunt you.
It's like, the only way he's going to ever rest in peace is just by, you know, he's got to get his hauntings in to make up for being stolen.
Yeah. So Mammoth Cave National Park purchased Crystal Cave in 1961 and limited access to the tomb now, but did not give him a proper burial until 1989.
Wait, like 28 years later?
3 years before I was born. Did not give him a proper burial until 1989.
Mammoth Cave National Park purchased Crystal Cave in 1961 and limited access to the tomb, but eventually gave the poor guy a proper burial in 1989 at Mammoth Cave Baptist Church. What? It took him 28 years to give him a proper burial?
Mm-hmm.
Not even that. He died in what, 1915?
1925.
1925. Yeah. Wow. I was way off. But still.
Yes. Yes.
So 1925 to 1989. I know I'm not good at math, but that's just way too long.
It's a lot of decades.
To having a proper burial.
Yeah. It's a lot of decades to have your body on display. Mm-hmm.
That's so uncomfy. I hope he's haunting people. Honestly, I hope he is haunting people. And if I heard somebody say that they were haunted by this guy, I'd be like, good, you probably fucking deserve it. You know the shit his body went through after he died?
Yeah.
That's just so disrespectful, honestly. Mm-hmm. If that was me and somebody was flaunting my dead body around, I would for sure, again, be haunting people for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And their children, and their children's children. The only way, it would be like a Robert the Doll situation. The only way that they could, like, get that curse to, like, remove themselves is just to write me a letter.
Yeah.
Be like, I'm sorry for what my ancestors did. Please stop haunting me.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you who don't know, Robert the Doll is a very haunted doll in the Florida Keys. Go look him up. He is a trip.
Yes. And you're not supposed to take pictures of him.
No.
Unless you ask his permission. Uh-huh. And if you take a picture of him without asking his permission, you're gonna be haunted. And the only way to not be haunted is to write him a letter and apologize for taking his picture without asking permission. So that's the reference on that one.
Yeah. Speaking of Robert the Doll, we are totally doing a ghost tour of Key West when we come down for the wedding.
Yes.
I'm gonna go say hi.
Yes. I've never done one, and I kind of do want to do one, but I forget the saying, but there's a saying that's kind of like, you know, word of mouth around town that, like, when you see the ghost trolley go by, you're supposed to say the saying, and, like, I guess everybody on the trolley is supposed to scream or something. It's just, like, a little fun thing.
I didn't know there was a ghost trolley.
Yeah, it's a ghost trolley, yeah, for the ghost tours. Yeah.
Noted.
Or you could do the walking ghost tour.
Oh, but, like, it's not a ghost trolley. It's not like a ghostly trolley. It's the ghost tour trolley.
Yes.
Okay. I was just imagining like an entire ghost trolley like going by, and I was like,
just covered in a large bed sheet.
Yeah,
just, like, it's a sheet ghost trolley just driving by. Like the holes are cut out around the headlights. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah, I love it. I'm inspired. All right. So he eventually gets buried. So that's great for him. This whole story will go on to later inspire books like Trapped. And it's literally Trapped with an exclamation point. So that's why
that's how that's spelled. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's written by Robert K. Murray and Roger W. Brucker. The Life and Death of Floyd Collins, written by Floyd's brother Homer Collins. And there is also a musical called Floyd Collins. And I should have put pictures in. It's fucking weird to go look up pictures of this musical. It's bizarre. I just don't understand how it could be a musical.
Oh, like, my God.
What are we doing?
How does that become a musical?
I don't know. They'll make anything into a musical, I guess.
Oh my God. It sounds horrible.
The pictures are weird too, because you know the story and you look at those and you're just like, what? So maybe I'll try to find some pictures to put on Instagram, because it's a trip and a half. There's also a 1951 Hollywood film called Ace in the Hole, inspired by the story. Due to this event, national attention was drawn to Kentucky's cave country with a newfound desire to protect it, which eventually led to the establishment of Mammoth Cave National Park in 1941. So a little bit about Mammoth Cave. It is formerly known as the Mammoth Flint Ridge Cave System. And in total, more than 426 miles of passageways have been surveyed. It is the longest cave system in the world. That's how big it is.
Oh, wow.
So Floyd Collins Crystal Cave and Sand Cave are known to connect to the greater Mammoth Cave system. So they're actually part of the Mammoth Cave system. So Alex was correct. They just
he
didn't
is
know.
Really smart. He is very smart.
They just didn't know that then, right?
Yeah.
So, and like that guy who like broke through to like a back door to Mammoth Cave, it's because all of these caves are just connected to Mammoth because it's just so big.
Mm-hmm.
So the caves in this area were formed when water slowly dissolved a massive limestone slab beneath a surface layer of sandstone, creating amazing passageways, cave formations, and crystals over millions of years. Animals that call the cave home include 5 species of bats, 2 genera of crickets, the spotted tail salamander, 2 genera of eyeless cavefish, a cave crayfish, and a cave shrimp. So that's it. The National Park Service now offers guided cave tours to visitors from 1 to 6 hours in length. And although some quote unquote wild tours provide a more authentic spelunking experience. So you get to, you know, crawl around on your belly. That's mm-hmm. what you want to do. So I would like to visit the show cave.
I would like to visit too. I've never been there.
Yeah. It I've heard it's really cool. And I've heard a lot of...
We should take a trip together.
Okay.
We can just
meet
go.
Up in Kentucky.
Yeah, I just want to meet up in Kentucky. And we can do the Bourbon Trail while we're at it.
Oh, yeah.
We'll just have like a great weekend.
That sounds fun. Yeah. Okay. Let's put it on the calendar.
Okay. And then we'll just like record an episode while we're over there.
Yeah. We should definitely stay in like a haunted hotel or something too.
No, you can do that. That's where I draw the line. Did I ever tell you the story how when I was like, I was a teenager playing soccer and it was for Loudoun County and we were doing our summer 2-a-days and we were in between sessions and we were at one of our teammates' houses and the girls were like, oh, let's go like play with the Ouija board.
No. Nope.
And I literally walked out. I was like, I do not fuck with that shit. I walked out. I called my mom. I was like, Mom, you need to pick me up. Like,
Mom, they're playing with a Ouija board. I don't feel comfortable.
But kind of, yeah. I was like, I don't do that. I'm too spiritual to fuck with that shit. So I don't do that. Like, I won't even watch TikToks on my phone because I'm like, oh, that spirit's gonna like give the bad vibes through the phone. No. And then I'm gonna need to cleanse the house space. Like, okay. I'm a little sensitive baby about all of that stuff. So mm-hmm. yeah, haunted mansions and haunted hotels and things like that, that's where I draw mm-hmm. the line.
See, I've never had a ghost experience that I can really remember. So I'm like,
you're like, let me have one.
I won't mess with Ouija boards because I'm like, why? They're too associated with like demons and stuff. And I'm like, just why invite it? You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if like you run into a ghost in like a haunted building. It's another thing if you're like actively like, hey, come into my house.
Yeah. I just,
you know? Yeah.
I just, if I'm going to be connecting with any sort of spirit, I want that to be like a passed on family member or friend, you know, like, I just don't want that to be anything else other than that.
Although,
you can go stay at a haunted hotel though.
Okay.
That sounds really fun for you.
I'm going to one in end of this month with Corey. For our coastal division meeting. It's at a haunted hotel.
So. See, like if I was in sciences and like I saw that like our conference was at a haunted hotel, I'd be like, I'm not going. But like straight up, it's like, if you want me to present a poster there, I'm not going.
I'm not doing it.
Like, put me in the daytime session and I'll go then. But like, I am not staying there. I'm not doing any nighttime session. No.
Well, we'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, please do. I'm always interested to hear people's stories about that, but I just don't want to have that experience for myself. No, thank you.
A suite. It'd be so fun.
Oh, nice.
That's so funny. So speaking of Floyd Collins, Haley's fiance, Alex, told us about a song about Floyd Collins.
Do you have it pulled up right now?
I do, and I'm
okay.
I'm gonna pause and let us listen, because, you know, copyright rules. But if you want to listen as well, it is the Ghost of Floyd Collins, by the band Blackstone Cherry. And so now that you know the story, makes sense, the title, for sure.
Yes. And they're like a hard rock band.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to try to like pull up the lyrics real quick, just to like.
Okay. I'm going to.
You want to pause?
Yeah, I'm going to pause and listen, because I haven't listened to it yet.
Yeah. So the little blip of the lyrics says, "Down in Mammoth Cave is where his body laid. Walls came in, life could not be saved. No man-made machine could see the things I've seen. Mr. Collins, you did not die in vain. Strangers moved in, brought the circus to town. You know there's people making money off a man underground."
Yeah.
"Somebody said they weren't doing him right. That's why old Flynn's coming back tonight, or old Floyd's coming back tonight."
Yeah. That the circuit, you know, brought the circus in the town. That's great. Those are great.
Yeah.
Cause it was a madhouse, you know?
Yeah. That's crazy. I just think it's hilarious that Alex knows that song.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Like, oh, Floyd Collins?
It's definitely harder rock, for sure. I don't know. But, like, the lyrics remind me of, like, folk songs.
Oh, yeah.
The way, like, folk songs work, where they, like, tell a story. You know, like, Johnny Cash and stuff like that.
It's like if Metallica was folk.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I like it. I think Corey would really like it. He probably already knows it. I'll ask him.
I thought it was crazy. I was like, wait, you know actually a story we're talking about? That's awesome.
Yeah, we'll have to listen to the episode, because...
Babe, this song slaps. You have to listen to it.
This song slaps. Episode title.
This song slaps. Yeah, it's just episode title.
It's giving, like, when we did the Edmund Fitzgerald, and I was like, oh, you gotta listen to this song.
Yes.
Although that song was definitely more folk, for sure.
But you know what's crazy about that song? I don't think I've told you this yet. Is Alex actually has that song in his rotation. So when we play music around the house and, like, we're cleaning and stuff, like, the Edmund Fitzgerald comes on and I'm just like mind blown.
That's funny. So
it makes me think of you.
I love that, like, people, like, make songs about this stuff, because it is really emotional and powerful and messed up, and this is a great folk song, and the lyrics to me are, like, almost reminding me of, like, the old school, like, murder ballads from, like, time.
Yeah.
Except it's hard rock, but I don't know, the lyrics feel very, like, folk to me.
They are, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the song that I was surprised about 2 minutes before we hopped on.
And now we know.
Yeah, the more you know.
Well, to take a turn, it's our last spooky season episode, so do you have any cryptids or spooky stories?
Yes. So I got the Pope Lick Monster, which is right outside. It's outside of Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville.
Uh-huh. I worked with a girl in Utah who is from around that area, and I tried to learn how to say it properly, and I know I still don't say it properly, so anybody that, if you're listening from around there, I'm sorry, but Louisville is the best I can say it.
There is a way, and I don't know what that... I say Louisville or Louisville. I don't say Louisville, because that doesn't fit in my mouth.
It's like in your throat.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm pulling this info from Wikipedia, but then also cryptids.fandom.com, which is like the cryptid wiki.
Okay.
So... the Pope Lick Monster is also known as the Goat Man.
Yes.
So, yeah. It's like half bovine, half human, you know. Cool. Really, the photos or like the illustrations of it makes me think of the Ritual Monster.
Oh, I love that movie. Oh, yeah. I made you watch that.
You made me watch it. And I had literal nightmares the same night of that same monster. And I was like, but... I'm pretty good at, like, knowing when I'm dreaming. I think they call that astral projecting or whatever.
Yeah.
Which I just learned that that's what I do, and I didn't realize that's what I do, and I don't have a good handle on it. I just like realize that I'm dreaming, and so then I wake myself up.
Mm-hmm.
This is also a tangent, but like I consciously know I'm dreaming, and like if it's a nightmare, I can like look around the room and be like, that's out of place. That's how I know that like I need to wake up. And then like I just like I try to get myself awake. And if it's like a really bad nightmare, I'll try to like make sounds or like scream, like move my body, like something to like wake me up. And like a couple months ago, I woke Alex up because I was like, I went, ah. We laugh so hard about it now because like it woke him up and he's like, are you okay? I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I was just dreaming. I had to get out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, so my dreams, when I need to wake up, I like I have like a couple seconds of like, oh, I'm dreaming, and I wake myself up.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know how we got on that tangent, so just
the
cut
ritual
all that out.
We were talking about the ritual.
Oh, the
we're
ritual
talking about
the
Popelick monster.
I'm so sorry. The Popelick monster is also known as the goat man, which, oh yeah, that's when I said that it reminded me of the demon in the ritual, which you made me watch, and I had nightmares later, and I had to wake myself up, and that's how we got on that whole fucking tangent.
It's a great movie.
That is, it was pretty good. I did appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So the legend is that it's part man, part goat, and part sheep. It's a creature reported to live beneath a railroad trestle bridge over the Popelick Creek in the Fisherville neighborhood of Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Numerous urban legends exist about the creature's origins and the methods it employs to claim its victims. According to some accounts, the creature uses either hypnosis or voice mimicry to lure trespassers onto the trestle to meet their death before an oncoming train. Other stories claim that the monster jumps down from the trestle onto the roofs of the cars passing beneath it, yet other legends tell that it attacks its victims with a bloodstained axe and that the very sight of the creature is so unsettling that those who see it while walking across the high trestle are driven to leap off. So, a lot of legends going on. There's other legends that hold that the monster is a human-goat hybrid and that it was a circus freak who vowed revenge after being mistreated. In one version, it is said that the monster escaped after a train derailed on the trestle. Another version, commonly told by locals of the area, claims that the monster is really the twisted, reincarnated form of a farmer who sacrificed goats in the exchange for satanic powers. Crazy. The legends have turned the area into a site for legend tripping, obviously. There have been a number of deaths and accidents at the trestle since its construction, despite the presence of an 8-foot fence to keep thrill seekers out.
Okay, so we can't go on our on our trip to Mammoth Cave. We can't also go here.
Again, you can do that, but I'm not going to do that. I stay far away from that. There is a common misconception that the trestle is abandoned and no longer used. In reality, the bridge carries a major rail artery into Louisville. Heavy freight trains cross the bridge several times daily, so it's easy for someone to get caught atop it while an oncoming train barrels down on them.
So it might just be because there's a train and that's why they fall off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Norfolk Southern Railway urged citizens not to climb the trestle, saying if caught, they would be arrested. So then we get into the media side of things.
Okay.
The monster was the subject of a 1988 film by Louisville filmmaker Ron Schnildicknacht. Wow, that is
No, so unfortunate.
I'm gonna have to copy and paste this, and you're gonna have to figure out how to say that, because that's as good as I can get it.
All right. So the minute you said Popelick, I was like, why the fuck is it called Popelick? Because that sounds hilariously inappropriate. And I don't have a good answer because everything is like pointing to the Pope like monster. And yeah, it's the creek, but why is the creek named that? So this person on Quora is the only person that I've found so far that can give like a somewhat maybe legitimate answer. So Lick, apparently a lot of creeks are named Lick in this area because it has mm-hmm. to do with naturally occurring mineral licks.
Oh, like so, a salt lick?
Yeah, so like wildlife will gather in these areas because again, like limestone caves, all that shit, right? And I guess Pope is a relatively common family name in Kentucky. So maybe, you know, somebody owned a land that was named, like last name was Pope. So it's not as fun as I thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah. Definitely doesn't sound as fun as what you thought it was going to be.
Anyway, continue.
yeah, all I was going to say is that there is a 1988 film. Called The Legend of Pope Lick Monster. It's a 16-minute, $6,000 film, premiered on December 29th, 1988 at the Uptown Theater. Most of the film was shot at the Pope Lick Trestle, but scenes showing the character up on the trestle were shot at another and safer location. And naturally, Norfolk Southern Railway officials were very upset about the film, as they thought it would encouraged teenagers to visit the trestles. They found one scene in particular dangerously misleading. In the scene, the main character, a high school student, narrowly escapes an approaching train by hanging off of the side of the trestle. In reality, few people would have the strength to hang on for the 5 to 7 minutes it takes for a long train to clear the 772-foot trestle. Mm-hmm. In addition, the vibrations from the train are so strong that the ground beneath the trestle shakes as the train passes. So, Norfolk Southern was, like, upset because it's like, you're gonna, just going to put more people in danger. They're going to want to go to this place. Yeah. They're going to try it out. More people are going to die.
Yeah, you know. I get that. So, the director, this is my attempt. This is my stab at his
go
name.
Go for it. Yes, go for
and
it.
And it looks German, so I'm using what I know about the German language based on, you know, living with my husband who is German.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go with Schildknecht.
Oh, very different than what I said.
Yeah. Ron Schildknecht.
Schildknecht. Yeah, you know, I'm gonna go with Jillian on this one. She's the smarter one of the friend group, honestly. So she
still know that I butcher the shit out of some names. I'm trying to be better about like looking up pronunciations, but you know, I have a job and forget to do things sometimes. And
same.
Yep.
Hey, everybody's burned out these days. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Join the burned out club.
Yeah. Seriously.
It's not because I want to be disrespectful to people's names. It's literally because I'm like everyone else hanging on by a thread, right?
I know. And it's like, how did we get here? Honestly,
don't fucking know
how. Like, it's anybody in any profession that I talk to, everybody is literally just hanging on by a thread.
Yep. It's good times.
Anyway,
it's great times. Yeah. So Pope Lick,
several people have died on or near the train trestle at Pope Creek in pursuit of the Pope Lick monster legend.
Yeah.
So, in 1988, a 17-year-old young man, Jack J.C. Charles Bam II, was hit and killed by a train, and another young man was injured while trying to cross the trestle. In 1994, a man was killed by a train after his ATV overturned on the trestle, trapping him on the track. In 2000, a 19-year-old fell to his death after encountering a train. On April 23rd, 2016, a 26-year-old tourist, Raquel Bain from Ohio, died after being hit by a train while searching for the monster. Her boyfriend survived by hanging on the side of the trestle. On May 26, 2019, Savannah Bright, 15, was pronounced dead at the scene after she and another teenage girl were on the train tracks near the Pope Lick Trestle. Bright's unidentified companion was taken to the University of Louisville Hospital. So, you know. Don't go looking for monsters, people.
Yeah, I'll take back what I said about wanting to go visit this one. You know, I'm all for a good occasional trespass to an abandoned place. But if there's like, I don't know, trains involved, trains potentially that could like
active
run you
trains.
Over, active trains, I'm out. I'm outie. Not about that. I occasionally used to trespass back in the college days.
I had friends that wanted to go to those like abandoned insane asylums, and I just I never went. Yeah. I was like, I don't do that. Like I said, I'm too spiritual to like do that stuff. No,
I think it's just scary because it's dark and it's creepy, and then your mind plays tricks on you, regardless of if there's actually ghosts or not. Because my cousin's trying to get me to go to one in Ohio. Like, there's this really big one in Ohio, and I'm like, I'll go during the day. I don't know about
night. Yeah, I don't want to go at night. Yeah, I only watch, for the most part, like 95% of the time, I only watch scary movies during the day. Oh. Yeah, if I watch a scary movie at night, it's because I'm with somebody that I trust, and I know that like I'm in a safe place.
Yeah. Yeah. Safe space. Yeah. Yeah. And you have a body next to you to be like, there's a noise. Go look yes. at it.
That, or like, I don't know, like even if it's like a friend, like in high school and college, like breaks and things like that, me and my friends would watch scary movies, and it's like, I always have to have a pillow or like a blanket, you know, like typically, like, I'm on my phone, like, scrolling, and, like, it seems kind of disrespectful to people that I'm with, but also it's, like, my way to, like, mentally distract myself from, like, the scary stuff on the TV. Yeah, so it's, like, I'm watching it, but I'm also kind of, like, you know, like, I'm not, you know? So, yeah, I'm a wimp when it comes to that stuff. Like,
It's funny that you chose the goat man. I feel like there's a lot of goat men. Like, it's a common...
Mr. Tubness, hello. But he's a good one.
No. Like, a cryptid. It's a common cryptid story. Because I was just talking to my friend who is born and raised in Texas, in LaGrange, Texas. Yes, from the ZZ Top song, that LaGrange.
Yes, yes.
And they have a goat man on a bridge. Oh. And, my dad's friend, who's from Chesapeake Bay, Maryland, originally, Maryland has a goat man story too. And that is like, it was escaped from a like evil scientific lab. And it's like a half man, half goat, and it just lives in the hills. And so when we were kids, he used to tell us that story, like when we were camping and shit, to like scare us.
Yeah.
And so now anytime anyone talks about the goat man, well, this one was a goat boy, but so in my mind, I'm just thinking goat boy, because that's what they would always yell at
this
us.
Is how they would say it. Oh, that's cute.
So that's, this is interesting. I feel like that's a common cryptid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's never been like an official sighting like there have been for like Slendermans or like Mothmans or things like that. But I mean, it's an urban legend.
We love an urban legend, but don't go looking after urban legends that can kill you in real life.
Yeah. Again,
you know what I mean?
That's where I'm like, I'm not going to go on a train track. And
no,
ironically, Alex used to play on train tracks and do like that kind of shit in high school. And I'm like, how are you alive? Like, honestly?
Yeah.
Like, no, thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to do my sources real quick. We have Tragedy at Sand Cave from Mammoth Cave National Park, Kentucky Cave Wars, also from Mammoth Cave National Park. I did a quick wiki search of Mammoth Cave National Park, and then the agonizing death of Floyd Collins, the cave explorer who was trapped underground for 17 days before he finally perished, by Austin Harvey of All That Is Interesting. And that gave me all the facts about how his body was like stolen and stuff, like all the aftermath. Wild. So let's move on quickly to happy things.
Happy things. Alex's birthday was recently. Mm-hmm. So we had a birthday party for him with all his work friends and his like personal life friends over. That was really fun. Mm-hmm. And then I also surprised him by building him a workbench, and I watched a YouTube video like 5 times. I still made one mistake, but it all worked out and it was all good.
But you built him a workbench. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I wish I had before pictures of what the shed looked like beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially it was like just plywood flooring. Mm-hmm. And I went on Amazon and got like those like rubbery gym puzzle piece kind of flooring.
Mm-hmm.
And so now our storage shed underneath the house has like that kind of like gym flooring on it. We did a whole purge of the shed. We're still kind of going through it, but his workbench is in there now, and it's actually like a usable, nice,
homey
kind of space. You know? So
that's good.
Yeah. So my big surprise for him while he was away, because he went to Vegas for the While We Were Young tour, was going to be to redo that whole shed, but I didn't have that much time, so I just decided to do the workbench was the main character of that surprise. So
no,
I
that's awesome. Yeah, I love that. Fun.
Yeah.
I guess mine is that we fucking won a major award.
That's so cool. I'm so happy you guys won an award. That's awesome.
Oh, it's something that we did not expect to win either. And I guess we're going to be featured, hopefully, if we can get our shit together at the Galveston Mardi Gras this year. So woo-woo.
I really hope that you guys can go. That would be so great.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like, that's always the best surprise, too. Like, when you're not expecting it, like, you just kind of do your normal, like, costume routine.
Yep.
And then you show up, and you're like, oh, we won a prize? This is great. Yeah. No, that's awesome. I love that for you guys. That's exciting. Yeah,
I'll totally post a picture of the costume on Instagram, too, because we've talked so much about it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. All right.
Well, to all of our listeners, where can they find us?
On the social medias, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We are on Facebook as Mother Nature Will Kill You as a Facebook page. We are on Instagram as Mother Nature Will Kill You Podcast. And then on TikTok, we are MNWKY Podcast. And then we also have a website, mothernaturewillkillyoupodcast.com. And then you can listen to us at any or on any streaming platform like Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts.
Yeah. If you have been trapped in a cave, or if you have encountered the Pope like monster, we want to hear about it. But if you've just had an uncomfy experience in nature, maybe your flashlight went out in a cave and it was freaky, or, you know, maybe you ran into a bear on a hike. We want to hear about that, too. You can submit all your stories. We have a page on our website that you can just submit your story to, or you can send it to our email. And if you want to help out the podcast, but you don't have any money because we live in a post-capitalist hellscape, you can give us a 5-star review on any of the listening platforms. Yeah.
Yes. Especially if you're new, just give us a rating. Constructive criticism. Be nice to us. I've been told that I don't take criticism very well. I'm still trying to work on that, but
it's one of those things. If you don't have something nice to say, you know, don't say it, I guess. I don't know.
I guess part of me is also like, well, if I'm doing it and it works out, why correct me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Everybody does things differently. You know,
I guess, like, if you're going to give a criticism, make sure it's constructive. Don't be mean for the sake of being mean.
Yeah.
That's just where I'm at with all of that.
That's fair.
Because there's too much meanness in the world.
There really is.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, one of my recent pet peeves is that people just don't extend enough grace to each other.
Nope.
There's just not enough, like, putting each other in other shoes.
Yep.
Anyway, 5-star ratings. That's what we're all about.
Yeah. So this wraps up spooky season. Obviously, we are not going to stop talking about scary stuff. That's kind of the whole point of the show. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a very special two-parter coming up. So get excited.
I'm excited.
With that,
stay safe, but most of all,
stay curious, explorers.
Bye.
Happy Halloween.